Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
We'll call the House Appropriations Committee to order, and the Secretary would read the roll.
Berg?
Here.
Dennert?
Here.
Wismer?
Here.
Carson?
Here.
Dietrich? Peters?
Here.
Wink?
Here.
Putnam?
Here.
Tiedemann?
Here.
You have a quorum.
And Representative Dietrich is excused for today. We want to welcome the Internet listeners to the House Appropriations Bill hearing. Just a reminder that if you have cell phones and if they do go off, we're into a healthy mode in this committee. We're going to ask that you donate 50 cents per person here. That would go to your favorite charity. So, no, not general fund. We'll find other money for that. This goes to a favorite charity.
My account number is...
That's the Tiedemann Dennert Retirement Account? Good, I like that. Okay, remind all the folks that are here to testify to also sign in so that the Secretary has the proper and correct spelling of your names. If there's any handouts that need to be passed out, we'll have our pages do it. We have one page here, so if you have handouts as you're coming forward, just wave and we'll get those to the pages. If there's any questions, remember, committee, go through the chair, just like we've been doing in joint, pretty much follow the same procedure. So with that, the chair would like to call on Vice Chair Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, when the chairman come to the meetings for bills from agencies, sometimes they're on a list, and today we have one of those bills that's been given to us for a hearing. It isn't on the agenda today, for purposes that we need to do, I now make a motion that House Bill number 1039 be brought to the head of the schedule we have today.
It's seconded by Representative Peters that we bring up House Bill 1039. That was not posted. Any discussion on that, Representative?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason this bill was given to us by the Speaker of the House was that he saw that there were revenue involved in it, whether it was pro or con or minus or plus, he saw revenue, so he sent it here. The situation is this. The tax committee needs to hear this bill because it is a tax issue. So based on that, the reason for the motion and the second is so that we can, my motion will be to refer it to the tax committee. So I would move the motion to defer House Bill 1030.
First we have to take the consideration of whether or not we're going to bring it up.
And that's the reason for doing it, is to let you know that's the reason we want to do. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion on bringing this onto the agenda? It does take a two-thirds vote. It's in the rule book that we can consider those matters that have not been passed, but it does take a two-thirds vote. Any discussion? Hearing none, the Secretary will call the roll. Say aye if you are in favor and nay if opposed.
Berg?
Aye.
Dennert?
Aye.
Wismer? Carson?
Aye.
Dietrich? Peters?
Aye.
Wink?
Aye.
Putnam?
Aye.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
Eight yeas, one excused.
Motion passed. Now, Vice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And get a little excited. First day, we want to get off and running. We have a lot of things to do. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And members, I would now move to refer House Bill number 1039 to the Taxation Committee.
Seconded by Representative Peters to refer this to the Tax Committee. Again, it's a repeal on the discount of the sale of cigarette stamps to distributors. They will hear it, and then they may refer it back to us. But any discussion on this motion to refer it to the Tax Committee? Hearing none, we'll take a vote. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. And the Secretary will call the roll.
Berg?
Aye.
Dennert?
Aye.
Wismer? Carson?
Aye.
Dietrich? Peters?
Aye.
Wink?
Aye.
Putnam?
Aye.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
Eight yeas, one excused.
Motion carried. Well, we'll start now with the top of the agenda, House Bill 1025 to revise the basic salary schedule for county veteran service officers. Are there any proponents to testify on House Bill 1025?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Steve Dewan. I'm the Secretary for the Military and Veterans Affairs Department. I'm here along with Mr. Locken. He is the current chairman of the Veterans Commission, and we're here to be proponents for House Bill 1025, which is a proposal to increase the salary reimbursement for county and tribal veteran service officers by 25%. And I'd like to say before I get started that this probably takes a little guts to come before you asking for an increase in a year that at such tough budget times. But I think I can show you that this is not going to be an increase in any general funds, but we have a way of maybe moving some allocated funds in our department. And I think this is important enough to the veterans where we should be, hopefully with your concurrence, be able to do that. A little background information for you. The South Dakota Codified Law 331624 states that each county and tribal government shall employ or join with another county to employ a veterans service officer. Veterans service officers work at the local level, acting as the initial point of contact for veterans and their families. Veterans service officers are county and tribal employees whose salary is paid both by the county or tribe and by the state government, and is based on a formula driven by the population of that county. In FY 2009, 53 counties and two tribes participated in this salary supplement program. In 2006, a legislative summer study group asked the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to form a committee to develop recommendations on the Veterans Service Officer Program. The department formed a committee made up of current Veterans Service Officers, members of the Veterans Commission, and Division of Veterans Affairs staff members. The committee studied individual workload, competency of the service officers, training, and compensation. Recommendations were developed and have been implemented regarding the training, use of technology, required individual competency, and teamwork throughout the veterans community. As far as the proposed salary increase goes, several options were considered by the committee regarding the salary increase. The group felt that the compensation was the key to attracting and retaining quality service officers. The current salary reimbursement rate has been the same since 1991. It was concluded that a 25% across-the-board increase was the best proposal at this time, with future considerations for an increase. The total cost of this proposal is $30,875. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs realizes that any requested budget increase will be a challenge for the 2009 legislature. However, we feel this proposal is very important and would be willing to fund the $30,875 increase internally by reallocating existing budgets. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, for your consideration of House Bill 1025. This proposal is important in how we serve South Dakota veterans and their families, and we ask for your favorable consideration. After comments by our current chairman of our Veterans Commission, Mr. Bill Locken, myself and my staff would be available to answer any of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, General.
Thank you.
Mr. Yes. Locken, do you have some comments?
My name is William Locken. I am the current chairman of the Veterans Commission. I'm also a county veteran service officer. I was part of that 2006 study that took place. And one of the things we want to emphasize is that as a county veteran service officer, you're the front line. You're the first contact that veteran's going to have, and may be the only contact that veteran has to a multitude of both state and federal benefits. So it is imperative that we have the right individual in that position. He needs to be well qualified, needs to be well trained on the benefits, and he needs to be properly motivated. As a result of that study, we've already implemented some things about training. We've improved our training, our summer school training, and we've also improved an accountability of what the service officers in the county are performing. As I said, they are the front line. I think this is a well-deserved increase, and it's important that we follow through with the study which recommended that increase.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe as a county service officer, you could kind of tell us what kind of, I don't know what county you're in for sure, and what kind of a workload you have and what kind of duties that you perform. Because even though I've been around here long enough, but, you know, so I don't know if I've ever really had all that explained to me.
Okay. The workload, of course, it depends on the county you represent. I represent a medium-sized county. Lawrence County is where I'm from. The workload varies. You know, we've seen an increase in the workload as a result of the current wars that we're in. Not only the Afghanistan and the Iraqi wars, veterans are coming in, but that has spurred an interest or a renewal in interest in veterans benefits from Vietnam, from World War II, Korea, all the wars as a result of the publicity that the current conflicts are getting. So the workload has definitely increased in the last few years. You know, as far as, again, it depends on the county you're in. You know, I see or visit with, on average on a week, probably 10 to 15 veterans on a multitude of benefits. As the veteran population's age and their need for health care increases, a lot of that workload revolves around health care. As the current veterans come back, there's also a need for service connection, looking at whether they have any injuries to do with service connection. And again, as the economy tightens, I start to see an increase for veterans looking at a pension program, which is an income-based program. So the workload, you know, I think is definitely increasing. There's a lot of federal programs. If a properly educated individual is able to get the information from the veteran he has in his office, he may find some relief for that veteran through federal programs. So that's, you know, one of the things that we emphasize to the service officers is a broad knowledge of all the federal programs so you can participate in them as when needed.
Follow-up question, go ahead.
Is this, I mean, are you really basically employed full-time, or is it kind of one of those things that on an ad-need basis?
It depends on the county. There are, we have some counties, we have Pennington County, for example, has two full-time employees. You could go down the list, but that would be the extreme. That's the most that we have. And then we go down to maybe like a Harding County who has a veteran service officer employed that works one day or 2 days a month or 1 or 2 days a week. Their availability is always there. They live in the community. The people know who they are. Office hours, like I say, vary according to the counties and what the counties feel, because we are county employees, not state employees. So whatever the county feels is appropriate for that county is what that individual works. In some cases, those individuals hold multiple hats. A very common job for a veteran service officer to have is emergency management in some of the smaller counties. So they wear both hats, so they're available full-time, but their duties involve more than one office.
If I could follow up.
Okay.
And on those that where you have multi-duties to, would they pretty much draw both salaries from those jobs, or would they be a blended of the two jobs as far as the salary goes?
Well, again, I don't know what the county, individual counties do, but I would assume that the county pays the individual according to both positions.
And they have that flexibility.
Yes.
Okay.
The salary supplement, they have to show to the state that they pay the minimum required by the salary supplement in order to get the state dollars from the state. And we outlined in there that 53 counties currently participate in the salary supplement.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. And General, just to mention, there were a few of us that were on that summer Sunset Review Committee, and I do remember the recommendation that we came out with to address the county veteran service officers' salary and also maybe restructuring reorganization. So do appreciate that. Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question now, if I understand this, the counties can choose to participate. Is it not a mandatory program, or are there 11 counties that do not have service officers?
That's correct. This is not mandatory that they participate, but we have 53 that are participating now, along with two tribal. And like I say, this actually would have no impact as far as the counties go to about for about 30 of the counties. It wouldn't make them increase their outlay at all. As a matter of fact, they might gain a little bit by this because this just affects the minimums that they can pay. Is that right, Bill?
Yes, that's correct. And 30 counties currently pay more than the minimum. 23 pay the minimum. And it's the state law requires you to have a veteran service officer. It does not require you to participate in this salary supplement. To do that, you have to pay your veteran service officer the minimum salary as outlined in this law. But the only law that is mandatory is that they have one. They don't have to participate in this program, but they have to have a veteran service officer.
Follow-up, Representative Wayne.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Can you give me an example, no specifics, but just an example of the breakdown between the county participation and the federal government participation, I guess, as far as ratios? Is it 90-10 or 80-20? Or
in terms of benefits, you mean? Or
well, as far as participation with the salary. You say there's...
The federal government doesn't participate in the salary. The salary is paid by the county, the representative county.
Okay.
And if they participate in the salary supplement by paying the minimum, then the state gives the a reimbursement portion to that county based upon population.
Okay, I guess I was wrong when I said federal. I meant state participation, I guess. What would they get back? What would the counties get back from this?
I believe it's 25% the state pays and the county pays the rest. Is that correct, George? Yes.
Okay.
So the state would pay 25%.
Thank you.
Representative Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the annual general fund impact if we do this bill?
There would be no general impact. General fund impact. We would just, if it's all right with this committee, reallocate within our department budget.
Thank you. Any other proponents for House Bill 1025? Other proponents for House Bill 1025? Other proponents for House Bill 1025? Seeing none, any opponents to House Bill 1025? Any opponents to House Bill 1025? Any opponents to House Bill 1025? Seeing no opponents, we'll close discussion and open it up to any action. Yes. Representative Putnam.
I'd like, as far as the discussion purposes, just make a few public comments. Certainly thank the General for coming here along with the folks from the local folks and asking for this to be done. There's a situation, I'll just bring up how this has really affected some of the folks in my area. We have a gentleman in our nursing home down there who's been there a number of years, and he came from Plankinton, which is Representative Berg's district up there. Or used to be? Oh, I apologize. I thought it was still... Okay. And he was from Plankinton. And the General was kind enough to come down with the local county services folks to present him with a medal that it was due him from the Korean situation. And so the local service officers do an awful lot for folks that couldn't do anything for himself. In other words, he had some things coming and he kept, and then when he got ill and had to go to that home, the service officers picked that up and carried it for him and made that aware to all of us down there. And so there is a lot of good that this does. And what we're really doing is just setting the floor for the payments. The counties themselves can certainly come up, and if they want to give their folks more raises, they can. But publicly, I'd like to thank the General for just taking the time just to come to our little town to do that, plus getting a chance to see him at Sturgis when they flew that little airplane over the top of us called B-1, and there wasn't a noise in the place that wasn't louder than that one. So anyway, having said that, I would think that this would be a good bill to consider, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Putnam. At this time, the chair is going to defer action on this bill until we work out with the Military and Veterans Affairs on specifically where we can find some possible sources of non-general fund dollars. So we're just going to defer action on House Bill 1025. Next up will be House Bill 1031. It's an act to increase the maximum allowable expense for erecting certain veteran grave markers and headstones. Proponents for House Bill 1031.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'd like to also be a proponent for House Bill 1031. I have on my right Mr. Mike Birnbaum. He's a present member of the Veterans Commission, and we also have another member of the Veterans Commission that's here with us this morning, Wade Hubbard over here, that is also here. I would like to, House Bill 1031 is a proposal to increase the maximum allowable expense for erecting veterans markers and headstones from $40 to $100. And again, what we're looking at is no increase in general funds. We're looking for reallocation of some of our funds within our department's budget. South Dakota Codified Law 33-19-5 allows for the use of military headstones or markers for the burial of veterans. The actual headstones or markers come from the federal government and are requested by the family through a veteran service officer or funeral home. Part of the expense of setting the headstone or marker is paid by the state. The current reimbursement rate is $40, an amount which has not changed since 1986. Inflationary increases have risen to the point where $100 is probably closer to the actual average cost of setting these markers. The FY09 base budget for the headstone or marker setting is $20,160. An increase of $30,000 will raise the budgeted amount to $50,160 and more closely align the budgeted figures with the projected actual expenditures. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for your consideration of House Bill 1031. After comments by Veterans Commissioner Birnbaum, myself and my staff would be available for any questions.
Thank you, General. Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Mike Birnbaum, and I'm a member of the South Dakota Veterans Commission. This issue I'm kind of personally involved with because I did set a headstone for my grandfather who had died many years ago, and I didn't even know we had the $40 fee, but I know it cost around $100 to place it, so I'm kind of personally involved with it. If a veteran's buried in the Black Hills National Cemetery, the headstone comes with it. There's no cost. As you know, we have many veterans in East River that are not close to the National Cemetery. So if they were to request a headstone, then the most they could get right now under the current law is $40. So what I'm proposing, what the bill is proposing, is that we would increase that to $100, because there's a lot of people in the other parts of the state that do put military headstones in, or the VA headstone. And I think it would be beneficial if they could have that increase. And all of you have been to cemeteries, and the standard one that most of you see is the white marble one that stands up. And I think that's pretty impressive when you go to a small town and you're standing there for a funeral and you see a headstone of a veteran. So I think it would probably help encourage veterans' families to possibly use that benefit. So I would ask that you vote for House Bill 1031. Thank you.
Any questions? Hearing no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other proponents for House Bill 1031? Any other proponents for House Bill 1031? Any other proponents for House Bill 1031? Any opponents to House Bill 1031?
Proponent?
You're a proponent. Well, you just about missed the calling there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just had not planned on being here, but I came in at the right time. But being in the memorial business, and
Representative, could you identify who you are for the people? Make sure you sign in.
I will sign in. Thank Representative Al Rausch from District 4.
Mr. Chair.
But being in the memorial business, I can attest to the fact that the fee that they are allowed that for doing the mounting or installing of the memorials is not adequate, and that it has been a long time overdue that it should have been raised, and I would highly support this bill. Thank you.
Any questions of the representative from Big Stone? I guess you're free to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any opponents to House Bill 1031? Any opponents to House Bill 1031? Any opponents to House Bill 1031? Hearing none, we'll close any of the testimony and open it up to any discussion. At the present time, the chair is going to defer action on this until, again, we work with Military and Veteran Affairs to identify specifically where or which fund, non-general funds, that will be taking it. I, too, do support this marker for the veterans. My grandfather served in World War II, or in World War I, excuse me, and my father served in World War II, and being very close to the military as a veteran, that they were very pleased to make those arrangements ahead of time prior to their death. So, again, thank you very much. Next bill will be House Bill 1043. An act to make an appropriation to reimburse certain family physicians and dentists who have complied with the requirements of the physician tuition reimbursement program or the dental tuition reimbursement program. Proponent of House Bill 1043.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lori Gill, and I'm the Deputy Secretary for the Department of Health. I'm here today to talk about House Bill 1043, which is a special appropriation for tuition reimbursement. One of the issues that's facing healthcare in South Dakota is that of a healthcare workforce shortage as we move into the future. One way that the Department of Health is addressing the issue is to work to sustain a competent workforce. And a tool that we have that we can use in the department that's available to assist are the health professional incentive programs, which improve access to quality health care in South Dakota. This tool is not only for the state, but also for communities to use as they're recruiting health care professionals. And it not only is for communities, but it's specifically for small communities in our state, those that have a population of under 10,000. The handout that I have before you outlines the bill that we're talking about. House Bill 1043 is an act to make an appropriation to reimburse family physicians and dentists who have complied with the requirements of the Physician Tuition Reimbursement Program or the Dental Tuition Reimbursement Program. The Physician Tuition Reimbursement Program and the Dental Program are both established in statute, and they were created to help eligible communities recruit physicians and dentists to come to their communities and to practice. Participants that participate in the program agree to practice in the community for 3 years, and at the end of which they will receive their reimbursement. The payment is really a partnership between the community and the state. And once again, the payment isn't made by the state portion until after the healthcare professional has completed their service in the community for 3 years. For both of these two programs, the Physician Tuition Reimbursement Program and the Dental Tuition Reimbursement Program, the amount of payment is equal to twice the resident tuition at the USD School of Medicine resident tuition for the four most current academic years at the signing of the agreement. And that's a methodology that is set out in statute as a way to determine what the value of the reimbursement is. The percent of tuition reimbursement that the state must pay is based on the community size. And so for communities having a population of 2,500 or less, the state's portion is 75% of the total amount. The communities of more than 2,500 but less than 5,000, the state's share is 50%. And for the communities of 5,000 to 10,000, the state's share is 25%. The community portion of this can come from a variety of sources. Different communities use different methods to come up with their portion. In some instances, it comes out of the healthcare community. In others, it comes from economic development. Each community can decide how they come up with their portion of the payment. And then just to analyze each section of the bill, the first section is where it outlines that for this particular year, we are appropriating or requesting to appropriate $145,938 to the department to reimburse one family physician and one dentist who will be fulfilling their requirements of their agreement during fiscal year 2010. And the practice sites are outlined and the physicians. We first have Melissa Bartling, who is a physician. She's been practicing in Scotland, and she will fulfill her obligation, and the payment would be due in September of 2009. The state portion of hers is $71,163. And the second, the dentist, is Christopher Rainier in Martin, and the date that his obligation is completed is March of 2010, and that dollar amount is $74,775. And once again, that's the state portion of their reimbursement. Section 2 authorizes the Secretary of Health or the Department of Health to approve the vouchers and to get the payment made. In order to make the payment, there's a couple things that have to happen. And first, we have to ensure that the healthcare professional has completed their three-year obligation. And also, the community must have paid their portion of the agreement prior to the state paying. And Section 3 specifies that any dollars that are not expended will revert to the state general fund. And in the instance that the any of the things that I've mentioned, such as the healthcare professional does not fulfill the obligation, then the state does not make their final payment, and those dollars that we're talking about here would go back into the state general fund. At this point, that concludes my remarks, and I will stand by for any questions.
Representative Putnam and Representative Dennard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To just be sure we're on the same page, the governor just gave his budget address yesterday. Is this one of his recommended expenditures in his budget?
Yes, it is.
And then next, on the reversion side, do you recall the Department of Health making any reversion in past years?
Yes, there have been instances where, you know, from the time that a healthcare professional enters into the agreement, they have the intent, they're going to go to a community, they're going to fulfill their obligation. In some instances, some life event has changed the course of their action, and they have not fulfilled their obligations. So that would be an example of what we call a default to the agreement, where the funds have gone back, reverted back into the general fund.
Thank you.
Representative Dennard? You got to ask. Okay. Representative Wink and then Representative Berg.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has this program been active long enough to have any data relating to those doctors and dentists that did they stay in the communities after that three-year commitment? Is there any data on that?
Yes, there is. We have a lot of data. We do track these individuals that are in the program. The physician tuition reimbursement program started in 1988, and then the dental portion began in 2003. So we have a certain level of data. But just some information for you. 10 of 15 physicians who have completed the physician tuition reimbursement program are practicing in South Dakota at this time. 9 of them are still in the community where they participated in the program. And of the dental, that's a newer program. There's been fewer in that program, but 2 of 5 dentists that have completed the program practice in the community where they participated in the program. That is very important data to us, and yes, we do track it.
Thank you. Very good. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have a waiting list of any people that are in this program that we're not reimbursing now because of the money constraints or any of that?
No, we do not have a waiting list at this time.
And just a comment, I know this is one of the programs my healthcare people just love because it helps them so much in recruiting somebody to come in the Miller Hospital and the Western Springs Hospital are the two main ones of the small communities and the clinics that go along with it, and they just absolutely love this program. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ma'am, I know that the dental program was probably started because we felt as though that the state was going to run out of dentists in a short period of time. With the downturn in the economy, do you see those dentists that maybe would have retired staying on in their practice, along with physicians, staying on and practicing longer or not?
That definitely would be a possibility that healthcare professionals aren't retiring as early as they may have originally intended. But you are correct. The program was started under the auspice of the fact that a lot of the healthcare professionals, as we were looking forward and projecting, were in the potential range to retire within, you know, the 10 years as we were looking out into the future, and that was part of the preparation to sustain a competent workforce into the future.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Gill. Other proponents for House Bill 1043? Other proponents for House Bill 1043?
Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
My name is Dale Gunderson. I'm a physician from Rapid City. I'm a volunteer lobbyist for the State Medical Association. The State Medical Association supports this bill. On a personal note, I returned to South Dakota. I grew up in Langford, had no money, came back with a loan that was at the time, I'm not sure if that's still going, where there was a 20% forgiveness per year, and it brought me back to South Dakota. And I went to Yankton, where there was no smaller town then, and there were no ENT, and there had not been an ear, nose, and throat doctor there in 60 years. And now there's three, but I moved to Rapid City eventually, but it brought me back, and it was very important to me. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Gunderson? Thank you. Make sure you've signed the sheet. Okay. Other proponents for House Bill 1043? Other proponents for House Bill 1043? Any opponents for House Bill 1043? Any opponents for House Bill 1043? Any opponents for House Bill 1043? Seeing none, we'll close the testimony and open it up to action. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move a due pass on House Bill 1043.
Moved by Representative Putnam, seconded by Representative Peters for due pass on 1043. Any comments?
Comments I'd make, Mr. Chairman, is the governor has recommended this in his budget. We have seen what the budget is about, but for that purpose, and even if things get a little tougher, we need to keep the bill moving forward, and so that we can have a get to a point in time in which we will look the things over that do make the differences. So for that reason, I'd move to pass.
Representative Dennert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I represent Brown and Spink County, and Aberdeen's out of the loop in this, but as I remember, Redfield, I think, acquired a dentist through this program. I think it's very important, as Representative Berg said, in the smaller towns across the state. Thank you.
Representative Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also agree that this is a very good use of the general fund dollars. These folks have gone to school, they've done their residencies, they've done their training, and they currently now have spent their 3 years or will very shortly complete their obligation that they had signed up for, and it's the state's obligation to reimburse them. They've done their time. It's time for us to step up and do our part.
Any other comments? Hearing none, we have a motion before for due pass and a second. Secretary, call the roll. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, nay.
Berg?
Aye.
Dennert?
Aye.
Wismer?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Dietrich? Peters?
Aye.
Wink?
Aye.
Putnam?
Aye.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
8 yeas, 1 excused.
Motion passed. Representative Peters, would you carry that one to the floor? Thank you very much. Next up will be House Bill 1069. An act to increase certain fees charged by the Office of the Secretary of State. Proponents for House Bill 1069.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Josh Larson, Bureau of Finance and Management. I come before you today as a proponent to House Bill 1069. First and foremost, Mr. I would like to thank the Secretary of State's office for helping us with the structuring and standardization of this bill. I know that we've both put a lot of work into this, so thank you. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is increase a broad base of fees that are charged by the Secretary of State, and these would help fund shortfalls in the base budget for the state of South Dakota. This bill also does some standardization of the fee schedules for the annual reports, the fees for annual reports amongst LLCs, LLPs, and corporations. Mr. Chairman, in a normal year, we wouldn't be coming before you to increase the fees for the Secretary of State, but in these hard economic times, we need to look at raising some fees. I mean, I understand it's never a good time to raise fees, but this large economic downturn, we need to account for every nickel. Some of the history here for fee bills that have been done that affect the Secretary of State are: in 1997, we did kind of an all-encompassing fee bill, and then 2003, and now we're in 2009, so we can kind of see a trend of about every 6 years we come in and make some adjustments. What this bill would generate in terms of general funds is a little over $1,070,000 for a new general fund revenue that would go in and support the base budget funding for the state of South Dakota. I have compared and looked at a good majority of the fees that are included in this bill to our neighboring states, North Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska, Wyoming, and Montana, and we are all in the ballpark in the majority of the fees. You know, everything's not going to marry up because different states fund their programs a little bit differently, but we are in the ballpark, and I don't think we're too high or low in comparison to our surrounding states. How we arrived at the new fee amounts, we basically took a look at CPI as compared to the last increase of the fees and made the new fee proposals. In most cases, we were within dollars and cents of what CPI said we should be at. So I think that holds a lot of water. Mr. Chairman, I can go through section by section and break this down. If I could have a page hand out this fee list, this would be...
It looks like Paige, Rachel is right. Going to be handing out the fees.
Intern Rachel.
That's right, but she's now Paige.
That's right.
She's learning from the ground up. Now, Josh, when you talked about the comparing, that's the new fees are in line with the surrounding states.
Correct.
Not the old one. I mean, the new fees will be in line.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah, I think this list will be very beneficial rather than going through each
and that's,
chapter in there.
That, Mr. Chairman, that's on LRC's website, and so I just gave a hard copy. I know that bill gets kind of long and maybe confusing in some parts, but and doesn't follow the flow of the bill, but it shows the increases in the last time that it was that the fees were increased, and then.
Representative Dennert, question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad you clarified that because, Josh, I gathered, Mr. Larson, I gathered your comment that our fees currently are in line with neighboring states. So thank you for that clarification.
Okay. Mr. Larson, anything else? Any other comments?
No, I'll stand by for further questioning.
Other questions, Mr. Larson? Representative Peters.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at the handout at the bottom, and it looks like at the back page, bottom last line, it looks like even though we're increasing the fees, we're going to be diverting a little bit of the funds. Is that the money in one of the other House bills that was on the floor?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Yes, okay. Representative, that would be in another bill.
Follow up.
I think the secretary will be addressing that. If you want to just wait till the secretary comes forward. Any other questions on Mr. Larson on the proposed House Bill 1069? Okay. Don't run off too far, though.
Thank you.
Other proponents of House Bill 1069?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Teresa Bray. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State, and I come to you today as a proponent for this bill. While it is not an easy decision to raise fees at any time, especially during the difficult challenges that we have at the present, it is our responsibility and requirement to balance the budget. The Bureau of Finance and Management has been working closely with us, and they have made the presentation regarding the fees themselves and those increases. Rather than submitting a separate bill and in an effort to be good stewards of your time, we have also included several changes to the statutes that are listed in this bill. These changes are for clarification and standardization between the different statutes of the fee schedules that cover our office. The most extensive changes that you will see in this are in Section 13 that are on pages 8 and 9. These fees are for the domestic trusts, and they're currently in statute written in more of a paragraph format. The citizens have expressed to us that this is extremely confusing, and we have to agree. To develop a consistency between the portions of statutes and regarding the business fee schedules, we have asked to remove the paragraph format and replace it with a list of the services we provide and the fees associated with them. Along with the changes of this bill, we do have an amendment with one more change, and if we could have our page provide this amendment.
We do have a page now.
Okay.
Mr. Secretary.
The Secretary is providing you with that change.
Change of the page?
Change of the page. For discussion purposes, could I have somebody move this amendment? Move by Vice Chair Putnam and seconded by Representative Peters that we can look at this amendment this time.
What this amendment does is it, on page 1, in section 1, it removes the words "except campaign finance reports, comma, from lines 9 and 10. What this will do will allow us then to charge the $1 per page fee if an individual requests copies of campaign finance reports. It should be noted, too, that we do have this information available on our website where anyone can pull the information down 24/7 and make the copies for themselves for free. Our office does request and ask that you would support this bill, and I will be standing by to answer any questions you might have regarding the changes.
Any, Representative Byrd, there's a question. Ms. Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
You know, when you're talking about on page 8 and 9 where you were going to change the language, does that affect, I mean, should that be in a separate bill? I guess it's to the point of my question.
When
does
we
it have, excuse me just a second. Okay. It doesn't really have anything to do with the fee increases, and this bill mostly deals with fee increases. So,
what we found when we were trying to go through and make the fee changes was it was extremely difficult in this format to clearly state what the fee was for the individual items. And so that's why on page 9, then you'll see that it was much easier to then be able to go through and list the individual services and the fee. And that's why we had combined it.
Thank you.
And at this time, I had asked for a vote on the amendment since we were talking about the amendment. So all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment carried. So now we have the bill before us as amended. Now, any questions, again, back on the bill as amended? Representative Wismer.
I'm looking at the fee for dissolution of a corporation going from 250 to 300. Do you find that, well, I don't know how you'd know, I guess, but in my practice, I just find that a lot of people don't bother dissolving the corporation because they don't want to pay that fee.
And this is on which page? Representative?
Oh, I'm just looking at your fees, the fee schedule, and looking at the increase on the fee for dissolution of a corporation from $250 to $300. And just making a comment and wondering if there's any logic to not continuing to increase that fee or in making it so large, because people just don't bother dissolving the corporations because the fee's still so big.
I believe on this, if you look on page 7 of the bill, for the dissolution, we do not charge for any fee to dissolve this. What this would be was possibly the reinstatement. If the organization has dissolved and they do want to reinstate their organization, then this is the fee that we would charge to reinstate them.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, follow up.
I'm looking at the fee list. I wasn't looking in the bill. And I was thinking that there was a rather substantial fee for dissolution.
If you look at the line above it, it says application for reinstatement following administrative dissolution. It's the two lines together.
Okay.
And maybe
it's actually for the reinstatement. It's not the dissolution. Okay. Good catch though, but I mean it's two lines written together.
Does that end?
I think the question now is there a fee for dissolution?
No, there is not.
Okay.
We do encourage organizations to dissolve, and that way it keeps all of our records as clean as possible.
This fee would only come into play when they want to reinstate.
That's correct.
Thank you. Any other questions of Ms. Gray? Hearing none. Other proponents for House Bill 1069?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State, appearing as a proponent. I know there's questions about how this bill relates to House Bill 1018, which is on the House calendar for Monday, and that's what I'd like to address. House Bill 1018 is a bill that would allow us to develop an electronic online system for filing corporate annual reports. We have 56,000 of these reports filed every year. The number of these reports increases at a rate of about 4.7% every year. It's a number that increases continually, and we're at the point, frankly, that our staff can't handle the volume of these reports that are coming in paper format. And so 1018 allows us to develop an electronic system to file those in a modern and efficient manner. This bill, 1069, in addition to the general funds that Mr. Larson talked about, will generate $179,000 in other funds, which is what Representative Peters was referring to, that will be used to fund House Bill 1018 as other funds. And so House Bill 1018, assuming this passes, does not have any impact on the state general fund, and obviously that's important to us. Be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Secretary? Yes, Representative Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I haven't actually read the other bill in great depth, but the $179,000 that is mentioned in the handout today, is that a one-time deal or is it 2 years?
If I might respond to that, obviously, if this bill passes, these fees would be ongoing. House Bill 1018 talks about us being allowed to keep $3 of each annual report fee for the next two fiscal years, and then it being reduced to $1 per report from that point on to pay for the initiation, the development of this system, and then ongoing maintenance of the system. The other thing that I might point out, House Bill 1018, that money would go into the UCC fund that currently exists. That's an other fund, and that fund requires that any amount left in that fund at the end of the fiscal year over $25,000 reverts to the general fund, and so there's no ability for us to put together a war chest, if you will.
And Mr. Secretary, just for clarification again, if these fee increases go in, these dollars go into the general fund.
That is correct. These dollars up to the figure that Mr. Larson gave you will go into the general fund, and then if 1018 passes, then those fees would go into the other fund.
Any other questions of Secretary Nelson? Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other proponents to House Bill 1069? Other proponents to House Bill 1069? Other proponents to House Bill 1069? Any opponents to House Bill 1069? Any opponents to House Bill 1069? Any opponents to 1069? Seeing none, we'll close discussion and open up for action. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move a due pass on House Bill 1069 as amended.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Seconded by Representative Carson. Representative Putnam, discussion.
Thank you. Those of us who've been on this committee and work hard to balance the budget and work towards the end result of what that can be recognize the fact that there are things there are line items in here in which I would want to certainly consider at a date later when we are more secure with knowledge, more secure with our caucuses, and know exactly where we're going to go here. But for that reason, I move it to the House floor in hopes that our caucuses would study it during that time and get an opportunity to decide where they want to go with the final outcome of what we may see in a few weeks or so. For that reason, not that I am supporting every line item in here, but I am supporting the governor's plan on which he's going to balance this budget. But what those line items are, I'm not sure. But for that purpose, I would move it as a due pass and hope I could get other folks to agree with me, and then we could get our positions. Thank you.
Other discussion? Any other comments? Hearing none, Secretary call the roll. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay.
Berg?
No.
Dennert?
No.
Wismer?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Dietrich? Peters?
Aye.
Wink?
Aye.
Putnam?
Aye.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
6 yeas, 2 nays, 1 excused.
Motion carried. This will go to the floor, and I will carry it. So if you have any information that you could share with me on some of that, would be very helpful. Thank you. Next up will be House Bill 1081. House Bill 1081 is an act to make an appropriation to defray operation costs of the 24/7 sobriety program. Proponents for House Bill 1081.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Larry Long, Attorney General. 1081 is a bill that we are asking for $116,000 out of the Law Enforcement Officer Training Fund for three purposes. First of all, we need more equipment, and I brought along the equipment. For those of you who don't know, the 24/7 Sobriety Project is an ongoing state program monitored by my office, which attempts to address the chronic problems of alcoholism and drug abuse in the criminal justice system. 70% of all the individuals who enter the criminal justice system, particularly the penitentiary, on any given year are addicted to alcohol. There's about 40%, 45% that are addicted to drugs. And so if you combine those two numbers, each year, if Secretary Reich was sitting here, he would tell you that about 90% of the women and 85% of the men who enter the correction system are addicted to alcohol or drugs. The purpose of 24/7 sobriety is to target these individuals before they get to the penitentiary and try to break their addiction to alcohol and break their addiction to drugs so that they don't become one of those statistics, so we can get them out of the system before they get there. And in that respect, we believe we've been successful. And the backbone of our operation is, of course, the program where we require these individuals to come to the sheriff's office twice a day and take a breath test for alcohol. We, up to this point, are currently processing or have processed over 10,000 people through that program. we've administered over 1.7 million examinations. Those people test successfully, cleanly, over 99% of the time. We are very excited about the success rates we've had. But one of the adjuncts to the program is the SCRAM bracelet, and we use this bracelet for the individuals who have legitimate problems in making it to the test site twice a day. And the individual who wears this bracelet is subject to having his blood alcohol tested once an hour through the emissions from his sweat glands. It's a very cool system. I wore a bracelet similar to this for 3 days, and I can speak candidly to its accuracy. It does follow you around, and it does accurately represent to whoever's checking your records how much alcohol you've had to drink. The original design of this bracelet was similar to a dial-up internet. The bracelet has a battery pack, and the original design was that it worked with a modem, which was plugged into a landline telephone. The difficulty that has developed is that many of our participants don't have landline telephones. You know, the world is moving to cell phones, and so the manufacturers have modified and upgraded the basic device, which they have traded out for us pursuant to our service contract. So we haven't had to pay anything for the additional upgrades. But one of the things we do need to buy is this piece. And this piece, we call it a clip. And what happens is the clip fits on the bracelet, and this allows an individual who has a cell phone, who doesn't have a place to plug in his modem, to go to the sheriff's office periodically, where a deputy can attach this clip to a computer and allows the participant and the sheriff's office to download the accumulated information to get it into the system. And that's usually accomplished by a trip to the sheriff's office about twice a week. We need one of these for each test site. So we've asked for an appropriation of a portion of that $116,000 is $36,000 to buy 60 of these. We need one of them for each test site. We don't need one for each bracelet, but we do need one for each test site. And so that's a portion of our appropriation. The second thing is we believe we will need in the within the next fiscal year about 50 more bracelets than we have. The bracelets cost $1,400 a piece. That's an additional $70,000. And that leaves $10,000, and I'm asking for the $10,000 to buy some experimental equipment. The process that we are following is kind of a chess match. You know, we figure out a way to test the individuals, and they figure out a way to beat our system. And so we make a move, they make a move, we make a move. One of the things that the people do, at least some of the people do, who test twice a day, is they try to drink alcohol between tests in amounts that they can control and beat the system. And some of them have better success than others. Eventually, we catch them because they are addicted to alcohol, they can't stop several hours in advance, and we eventually catch them. But there's a test on the market, a urine analysis test, and the proponents or the vendors of this test believe and claim that this test will disclose the consumption of any amount of alcohol within the previous 72 hours. And so if this test is viable and produces reliable evidence, and if it is cost effective, we may want to experiment with this and try to work this into our system so that we can target the people who we think are cheating. And so I would like $10,000 to buy some of those kits and experiment with them to see if it's a viable operation for us. All of this money will come out of the law enforcement officer training fund, so it does not impact general fund dollars. I will pass these around and stand by for questions.
We'll offer up questions. Paige, if you want to help pass that around, don't put it on though.
Well, yeah.
I do want to give you due recognition, Attorney General Long, that I believe you were recognized nationally with this program on the success rate of addressing this. Am I correct on that?
That is correct, Your Honor. Excuse me.
That's okay. I
got it right there.
Yes.
Force of habit. The Council of State Governments, the Midwest region last summer, selected our program as one of two programs in the Midwest region to be recognized for what they call the Innovations Award, and we were delighted to be so recognized. And then at the national convention in Omaha last fall, all of the eight finalists were recognized, and we were just delighted with that recognition. Okay. So thank you for mentioning that.
Yes, and congratulations, Attorney General.
Well, to be very candid, Mr. Chairman, I could not have done this without the legislative support that I've received. I needed the money to buy the bracelets, and the legislature has been very supportive, and it only works if I can buy the bracelets. So, again, thank you.
Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's the old cowboy adage that Representative Gabo, you say that. Go ahead, and if you can brag without lying, go ahead and brag. So, and we appreciate that because you are due that respect. A couple of questions. The first, in somewhat jest, but when you talked about your own test, what were your low and high levels? I mean, how did that measure with you in your own mind? And in other words, when you had a glass of wine for dinner that evening between the tests, did it absolutely register what you thought or how you felt about that situation?
Well, it was very interesting. We didn't jump into these bracelets. We wanted to try them out before we came to anybody and asked for the expenditure of dollars. We wanted to test drive them. And so the vendor came up and he said, pick out a few of your staff and wear these bracelets for 3 or 4 days and then keep track of what you drink, how much and how often, and then you look at your charts and try to convince yourself either the machine works or the machine does not work. And so I did exactly what they asked. And I didn't bring my charts with me today, but I can certainly provide those to the committee. But I'm the average upon which all of the proportions are based. All the numbers are based on the alcohol consumption of a 160-pound male, and I fit that category almost exactly. And so I put the bracelet on about 9 o'clock in the morning. My wife and I go to dinner. I have a couple beers. It's a Mexican restaurant. You have to have a cerveza or two with dinner. And so I did that. I went home. I poured a glass of wine, about 6 ounces of red wine. I drank that. What the charts showed was that my alcohol consumption began to appear on the charts about 6 o'clock in the evening, and they peaked out at about 3 o'clock in the morning at about 0.06, which is just about exactly where I would have expected to have tested had I taken a blood alcohol. Now, one of the differences is because it's the sweat gland emission, it's always about 2 or 3 hours behind the rate you would expect from a blood test, because it takes that much longer for the alcohol to metabolize through your sweat glands. But other than the time delay, the numbers were accurate, and I had a couple beers with dinner the next evening, and my numbers were just about at 0.02, just slightly above 0.02. And the third evening it was the same, so I got exactly what I expected to get.
Any follow-up?
Thank you. No, that's okay. Fine. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not that I'm overly concerned about it, but is there any uncomfortableness about wearing the bracelet?
There was more with the bracelet I wore. I wore an earlier generation of this bracelet, and it was much larger and it was much heavier. The one that I wore weighed about 8 ounces, and this one is, and it had a pack on each side. This one is much more comfortable, or much less uncomfortable than the one I wore. I like to jog. It was not pleasant running with that one on, but this one is much more comfortable.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Carson, then Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions, sir.
Okay.
How many bracelets do you have in play right now, and with the addition of what we're going to authorize you to put into the system? And when they're doing the breathalyzer at the sheriff's office, is there a charge to the person that's doing the breathalyzer, and if so, how much is it?
We have about 600 bracelets in inventory right now. And I frankly don't intend to spend that $70,000. I really kind of want that in reserve. If I don't need to buy more bracelets, I fully intend to not buy bracelets. I do desperately need these things. But we have about 600 in inventory right now. In answer to your other question, the answer is every time an individual comes in to take the breath test, he has to pay a dollar. So it costs him a dollar for each examination. That money goes to the sheriff's office to defer the costs that the sheriff's office incurs for the personnel that he has to hire and the deputies that he needs occasionally to run people down who don't show up for tests. And other than the initial donation of equipment, which I took state dollars to utilize to get each entity started with equipment, then the sheriff's office is expected to buy more breathalyzers and the tubes and the other recurring costs, the urinalysis kits, the sweat patches, everything else we use. He's supposed to buy that out of the revenues that he generates. And so far, that has worked. The only thing that we have spent state dollars for is equipment.
Thank you. Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. Have those bracelets been out long enough to where you can determine what the estimated lifespan, how often do they have to be replaced? And then the second part of that question is, can they be worn around the ankle and still be effective?
The ankle is where they're worn. No, it's an ankle bracelet. They're not designed to be worn anyplace other than the ankle. We don't know what the useful life or life expectancy of the bracelets is now, and part of the reason for that is because we started with the old generation of bracelets. Our service contract allows us and qualifies us to get the new generations of bracelets as they are as they come online, and we don't have to pay anything extra for that. So we've not had any bracelets long enough to wear them out, so we don't know the answer.
Representative Dennert.
Attorney General, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attorney General Long, a dollar a test at the sheriff's office. Does the client have to pay for any use of this?
Yes. Yes, he does. The initial cost of the bracelets is $1,400. All of the bracelets that are in inventory belong to the Attorney General's office. That's state property, and that isn't going to change. The clips will be state property. We loan the bracelets out to the units of local government for their use. The wearer, the participant, has to pay the daily fees that we owe to the vendor. What happens is the information either gathered by computer or gathered by the modem is transmitted on a daily basis to the vendor in Colorado. His experts analyze the computer readings and provide that information back to local law enforcement on a daily basis, indicating either that the wearer has been consuming alcohol and is in violation, or that he's cut the bracelet off as in violation, or that he's tampered with the bracelet in some fashion to make it unusable, and all of that can be all that information can be garnered from the computer readings. The fourth answer, of course, is that the bracelet is in working order and the guy has been staying sober, which is the answer that we want. But the cost to the vendor, or the cost we owe the vendor, is $5 a day, and the wearer is required to pay that. And that money goes to the clerk of courts and is transmitted from the clerk of courts to my office. And so because we own the bracelets, we are responsible to the vendor for that payment. But up to this point, our collections have been sufficient so that we have not had to incur any deficit for non-payment on the bracelets.
Any other questions of Attorney General Long? Thank you. Other proponents of House Bill 1081? Other proponents of House Bill 1081? Other proponents of House Bill 1081? Any opponents to House Bill 1081? Any opponents to House Bill 1081? Any opponents to House Bill 1081? Seeing none, we'll close testimony and open it up to action. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I would move to pass on House Bill 1081.
Do we have a second to that motion? Seconded by Representative Dennard. Any discussion? Representative Putnam.
I don't know that we need to discuss it at any length, but I certainly see the efforts of the Attorney General in putting this program out there and other states looking at it, and it's been such a success that I would consider we continue to move on with it. Thank you.
Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a former county commissioner coming from a county that's participated in this program, I had an opportunity to get periodic updates from our sheriff and state's attorney, and it's in their opinion that it's an excellent program. It's not only effective, but it's really a win-win because it allows the individual to still participate in the community, whether it be through employment or to be with their family. And it also saves the county money because basically the individual is out in the community and not in the corrections facility. So I would urge the members of the House to this committee to pass.
Any other comments? Hearing none, we'll vote on the motion as put forth on House Bill 1081. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, and the secretary will call the roll.
Berg.
Aye.
Dennard.
Aye.
Wismer.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Dietrich. Peters.
Aye.
Wink. Putnam?
Aye.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
8 yeas, 1 excused.
Bill passes. I'd ask that Representative Carson, will you bring that to the floor?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Any other action needing to come before the committee? I believe the next day that we meet will be a week from today for bill hearings. Seeing none? Moved by Representative Dennard and seconded by Representative Peters to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. We're adjourned.